Welcome, everyone, to episode 102 of the New Gen Mindset Podcast. I'm Dan Kozel here with Nick Tartaglia. We have a rate cut coming next year. Is that what it looks like? Because that's what treasuries are telling me right now.
I mean, it's been something we've been talking about for a while. Actually. Yeah. We kind of foresaw this coming.
Yeah, and like bonds have been moving up. So if you've been watching TLT, we've went from 83, it's up to 97 now. So I think, and yields are just dropping. It's funny, I was looking at Instagram this morning and the real estate agents are back.
Of course.
They're like, lock in those financing rates. Exactly. It's coming down. And I'm like, no, dude, like this is what happens when you're like entering a very deep recession right now.
It's an inflationary cycle. You might be able to protect yourself, but the thing is, there's so many other variables to take into account in this kind of analysis. It's not just as simple as, ooh, okay, we don't want a recession. We need to protect mortgages, so we're just going to lower rates, and that's the end of it. No, no. Sure, you might lower rates, but then think about the other side of that equation. Does inflation then rip again? Does this imply that the economy is that frail and that sensitive to debt that you need to lower rates to hopefully keep the illusion going? But the thing is, again, inflation is not going anywhere. And if you lower the rates again or stop it, then you're just kind of recreating this hype in the market again. So you're just adding to the inflationary pressure. So you might get, like, you might be able to protect yourself on one side, but the other side of the equation is still going to hurt you. So it's not necessarily just a simple one factor analysis of, ooh, interest rates are coming down. That's not the end of the discussion. There's a lot more to say.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too is everyone's omitting the fact that, you know, there's massive debt in the system. Absolutely. I mean, we keep talking about it too. I will say this though. I will not be surprised to see a market melt up in the next few months where people are just stoked because they think, oh, rates are coming down. Exactly. And you're going to see more inflation get pushed into the market. So that's obviously going to cause valuations to maybe even double, quadruple from where they're at.
It's the wealth effect again. You're allowing people to think that wealth can be sustained and that liabilities are no longer that much of a factor in terms of downward pressure. So it's the wealth effect that also impacts inflation, because then you make people feel like, okay, my assets and my wealth is protected. It's not falling anymore. So now I can adjust my spending accordingly. So because I am still decently wealthier, it's not as impactful. I can spend more money. So the more people spend, the more obviously the money supply, the movement of currency flows at a much greater rate. So then again, you push prices up higher. And then again, this is not taking into account that typically in winter, energy prices go up, which is something you made a point to the other day.
Yeah, but I will say this. I was looking at natural gas the other day and oil. It's funny. Oil, this is, and I just want to throw this in here before we really focus on like the topic of conversation today. But oil is the reason the quote-unquote inflation has come down. It's not the Fed. It's not the Bank of Canada. Oil prices, and by the way, historically, when oil prices rally and then drop like that, that means you're entering a very contracting economic environment too. Another thing to pay attention to is whatever the DXY does. It's the US dollar. I mean, it's just been blown off to the downside. So think of it as your inverse indicator of the market. Anytime the DXY goes up, the market actually goes down, and then vice versa.
It's the cash transfer. So typically, right? If you're in assets and you sell off, those assets can get converted into cash. So you have this kind of, well, the market sell off, the dollar might go up in the short term. But then that's when it moves out of the asset.
It's more of, I think what you're talking about is it's not the actual currency conversion. It's more like, okay, what's flowing in and out?
Yeah, exactly.
It's
just assets.
That's been the correlation right now. So,
and plus we saw with gold, gold basically hit an all-time high. What was it? A week and a half ago? Hit all-time high, which obviously kind of correlates with the inverse relationship with the dollar, DXY. So, and it's floating right at that region. So it's like something's about to happen. And the fact is, this is clearly it's moving in the direction, because it's like, well, the Fed's pausing. The European Central Bank is going sideways. The American Central Bank is going sideways. Canadian Central Bank is going sideways. So you have this pattern that's going sideways, because obviously they don't want to put too much pressure on debt. They don't want to destroy everything and completely deflate the economy. So that's this is where they're stuck. And then obviously going into the winter, if energy prices make a rebound, if mortgages start becoming a real issue.
I will play devil's advocate with energy prices. Like, I think we might actually have a very affordable affordable winter for gas and oil. So everyone's been taking a beating these last few years, especially on food inflation. That's just something I'm looking at.
It's also assuming there's no other war that gets in, put into that factor.
Yeah. And then the last thing before we jump into what we want to talk about is, you know, I think, and this is just a thesis, I think what would be interesting is as we enter the next quarter, which is the next 3 months, I think you're going to see, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens to gold and Bitcoin simultaneously. If there's a period where the market starts dropping and Bitcoin actually starts
the decoupling,
it actually starts like accumulating and then you see more, you know, the price of Bitcoin going higher and you see that consistently. I mean, there's your argument that everyone's been saying, oh, Bitcoin's a hedge against inflation. Again, I'd be curious to see if that happens. So something it's that the, we're paying attention to.
Typically in a new asset class, you want to see what it behaves like. Historically, gold, Bitcoin has been correlated to risk on assets. So it's not saying that gold can't in the long term, Bitcoin can in the long term behave a certain way that we want it to as an inflation hedge. But the thing is, its history speaks volume because action determines more patterns in terms of, let's say, human, but in terms of an asset class. So if historically it's correlated to risk on assets, you still have to have an assumption that there might be some sort of correlated risk behavior with it. But if it starts to decouple in this new cycle of inflation and it starts to more correlate with the movement of gold, this is when you start observing a new trend and a new pattern, and this is something that you want to be reinforced, and that's when you start noticing, okay, maybe the trend has shifted, it's decoupled from risk, and it's now starting to be considered as an actual hedge and a safe haven.
Yeah, so again, I'm going to be looking at that, especially into Q1 of next year. I'd be curious, you know, the market starts dropping, Bitcoin starts rallying, that confirms that. So why don't we set the stage, though, for what we're going to talk about today, and I think that's really, you know, government intervention, a topic that you and I really enjoy talking about because one, it creates more problems than solutions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Always.
Two, the taxpayer is always on the hook.
Always.
I'll throw in a little caveat here, but there was I forget the guy's name, but it doesn't matter. The energy minister or the guy who's pushing for like climate agenda in Canada. He got sued by the founder of Rebel News, and the guy sent him a check because the court ruled, they're like, you owe him $20,000, and the guy sent him a government check. Oh, thank you, taxpayers. We have to foot the bill on their stupidity. So again, like if you're smart enough to realize, if you have been paying attention for the last decade, government intervention has not been good for anybody.
Because more government implies more rules, more laws, more spending. All those variables imply that they need more resources. More resources implies they need to take more from you or they need to deficit spend. One way or another, you're going to owe it through direct taxes or through inflation. So you want more government, you're just basically saying, take more away from me.
Yeah.
Make me smaller. Make me less capable of taking responsibility and making decisions for myself.
So we're going to focus it more on North America, and then we're going to talk about South America, which we'll get to. But, you know, we've shown this chart many times. This is pretty much what the debt bubble looks like. This is 30, we're almost at 40, no, no, $33 trillion of U.S. debt.
So, yes, yeah, so we
passed, in that market.
So, we passed 34 trillion. We hit 33 trillion in September.
Yeah.
And now we're $100 billion away from $34 trillion.
This is the U.S., by the way.
Exactly. And so the key now is understanding. I mean,
Canada's chart's probably somewhere, just different metrics.
And you have to understand now is the rate at which this debt is expanding. So now America is on trend to basically incur, at a national level, $1 trillion of debt per quarter. So theoretically.
In interest.
So,
$100 billion in interest.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But I'm talking in terms of just like the expansion of the debt. So next year, for example, if they stay on this rate, if they by the end of the year, that 34, by the end of next year, they're going to be at $38 trillion of debt. And it's just going to, and it's most likely going to expand exponentially because again, liquidity is key, more geopolitical expansion, more military problems, more government spending, more social programs, and more desire to spend on renewable and energy transition, which requires trillions of dollars on a global scale. So keep watching out debt because debt is a real indicator of what citizens are owed, what they owe to the government, even though technically they shouldn't owe that. So, and that's an indicator of how inflation is going to keep moving, and the real impact of inflation in terms of a long-term cycle.
Yeah, so in order to combat this, they have two options, right? They could print more money, but that causes more inflation. Or they could devalue their currency, which unfortunately reduces the purchasing power of the consumer too, indirectly, right? So it's like a catch-22 type of thing. And, you know, in Canada, it was just funny, like when was it 2000? I think it was at the end of 2014, Canada had a surplus of $2.5 billion in the system. I think people were a lot happier. I think people weren't even aware. They weren't appreciating what was happening. And fast forward a decade later, we're $400 billion in the hole right now of a deficit. That's going to take 10 years to pay back. If we can actually do something productive, but every single industry that has been under attack, particularly oil and gas in Canada, they've been implemented all these restrictions and sanctions, not necessarily sanctions, but just all this red tape that's causing everyone to be like, how do we unlock the natural resource potential in Canada? It's the same thing in the US with oil right now, right? Why did they drain the strategic petroleum reserve? Right? Oh, because they wanted to do imports and exports with the rest of the world. But you don't drain your reserve, right? That's supposed to be there in case, God forbid, a war breaks out. And it seems like there's a coordinated attack right now on the West, particularly in Canada and the US. Maybe Mexico is involved. I don't know. But there seems to be this coordinated plan right now where they literally want to destroy the US and Canada from within. And they're doing it in a way at the cost of the hardest working people in this country.
And our politicians and our governments are right along their side, holding their hands and letting them do everything they want, because they're basically part of that game. You know, it's funny, Canada, we keep spending money. We talk like we have infinite amount of money. We have all these problems. Big government, you know, sending $5.3 billion to, what is it, the Philippines for climate change, announcing a new...
$5.2 billion, not even million, right?
No, billion, yeah. exactly. And then now promising the new dental care, which is about $13 billion worth. You know, it's like, again,
dental care is fine. I will say that...
It's still spending.
It's still spending, I agree. Don't get me wrong, Nick. I still think that there are certain government services that need to be around, but there are... They've almost gone overboard at this point.
Well, it's
right?
The point now is you're just spending in deficit. You're not spending money we have. You're spending money we don't have.
Yeah.
And now is all they're doing now is using these little tactics to kind of create this illusion as if, no, don't worry, regardless of inflation, this, that, we've got your back. But the thing is, the more they spend on your behalf to create this illusion that they're going to take care of you, the more you're going to owe on the other side with inflation and taxes. So you're one way or another, they're going to screw you. So whether or not they take care of your teeth or they take care of your hair or they take care of your skin or your health or any other factor is at the end of the day, you're going to owe them. You're basically becoming a tax slave for them to provide you these services.
I'm not going to lie, though. I do think dental programs are important, but I get what you're saying, right? It's like we're literally spending. It's like going on overdraft on steroids. Yeah, literally all this is.
It's just to keep painting this like facade that makes us think that, you know, everything's okay, government can keep spending, but it's like they're not solved. All they're doing is adding to the problem. So, okay, cool, my teeth are fixed, but now you're crying about inflation. So you want government to spend more again, but I still want you to take care of me here, but you don't want inflation. You can't have both. It's one or the other.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a zero-sum game.
It doesn't work that way.
So pay attention to the debt numbers. Like this is absolutely what that this is why we're all paying exorbitant amount of taxes, especially if you're doing really well. You're still paying a lot. I'll throw in an example. If you're an NHL hockey player, Carey Price, still making $10.5 million. He's paying about $6.5 million in taxes in Quebec, in Canada. Where is that going? I don't mind paying taxes, right? I don't mind paying what needs to get paid. What I do mind is like when it just gets blown and then you might as well just throw it to these, you know, in an ash pit at that point or a fire pit just so it burns. Because I'm seeing every week there's new reports coming out, especially in Canada, where government officials are going on these extravagant trips. They're going on these like lavish endeavors to talk about the climate and they're spending like $500,000. And we're just like, where are you getting? It's like, where are you getting this money from? Who's footing the bill? Who's footing the bill? Just keep asking that question, I guess, going forward.
That's it. It's all about all spending. It's not just, ooh, what are taxes and that's all. It's total spending. You will owe it through inflation or you will owe it through taxes. It's all the spending that matters. It's not just like one component. It's not just what are taxes and that's what I owe. No, no. All of the government spending, that is what you're going to end up owing as a citizen.
So let's keep going here, because we brought wars up as a means of more inflation into the market.
Yeah.
And we're at a point now where we're seeing this guy make appearances globally. Full disclaimer, I am Ukrainian and I'm Russian. Okay. The way that this war, first of all, I'm just going to set the groundwork. This war has cost every single taxpayer like a fortune. Okay. And it almost seems like every 6 months, you know, Zelensky comes out and he's just like, send more money for the guns, send more money for the weapons. And it's like, dude, what are you trying to accomplish here? And I have a lot of questions, okay? A lot of questions related to potential energy deals that were happening in that country. Why were there NGOs in Ukraine in 2013 that were there? Again, these are just questions. I'm not assuming anything, right? So it almost seems like there's you have to ask a lot of questions here now. It's like, okay, who's going to win this war, right? Nobody really cares at this point. And as soon as we had another regional conflict, Israel, Hamas, which again, we won't really focus on for this part, but when you have that focus taken away and you have this guy making TV appearances asking the US, and I'm quoting him here, don't build roads, spend all your money on weapons, drones, society and pensions. We have one enemy and that's Putin. How does that make the West look right now?
And remember, he is the same guy that also said, if you don't send us money and don't help us, you will have to send your sons and your women and your children to this war.
That was the defense secretary.
Well, no, he said it too.
Yeah. There is a backdoor meeting, right? So, I mean, you got to ask yourself the question. It's like, why are you funding this? Like, why don't we just take care? And Canada's part of this too. I think we sent about $200 million to Ukraine. I'll ask myself the question as an investor. What's the ROI on that? Like, what did we get for that?
We're in a negative anyway. So there's no way any of this is going to get us out of this negative tranche. Because we're just keep digging our grave. We can't help everybody. You fix your own bed, fix your own house, handle your own things at home, figure this shit out.
Yeah.
Then you go out and help others. If you try to help others before you can handle your own shit, then you fall apart. You know, we're just going to drown with the rest of the world.
That's it right there. That is our biggest fucking problem, excuse my French, in the West. It's like we want to help as many people as possible, but you haven't taken care of your own shit yet. Exactly. So it's like, what are we doing?
We're not helping. We're just
it's just not sustainable.
And the funniest thing is typically when we do this, all we're doing is we're allowing government to centralize the resources more and more as a result. Then they transfer these resources, they redistribute it somewhere else to another country, and it doesn't go to the people. It stays within the government and the bureaucrats of those governments. So all we're doing is really just helping one rich elitist group take from its people, give to another elitist group of bureaucrats, and then they all become enriched and empowered at a further dissociate themselves from their own people. And then all we've just done is further expand the wealth deficit in two different nations or whatever nations we play this game with. And then here we are saying we're helping people. Who are we helping? Governments or are we helping people? I don't think we're helping people because people don't seem to be doing better. Governments seem to be doing better. They're bigger, they're stronger, they have more resources, they have more money, they have more power, they have more control. Zelensky, there's no elections anymore. Decentralized.
Yeah, and I like how they call him like, oh, he's for democracy. The guy's a dictator. He's jailed about like three of his opponents in the last like 10 years.
He even said, FYI. You want me to hold an election, send me more money.
Yeah.
So what you're doing is you're blackmailing. You're putting your own people at risk. You're claiming to be a force for democracy, even though as a libertarian, democracy is not actually a necessity for a free market system. But that's a conversation for later. But he's not what he says he is. And nobody seems, and for people to think he is exactly what he says he is, it's like, what are you watching? Media? Or are you actually watching the world?
I mean, it's just funny because like everybody who was like trying to figure out, okay, what side are you on? Was basically like, oh, I stand with Ukraine without actually understanding what that meant. And look, I'm not picking sides here, although I come from both sides. They're both dictators in their own right, okay? I'm not siding with Putin here. Putin, by the way, he's brilliant. I don't support him,
tactician.
But he's a tactician. What Zelensky is doing is he's using his emergency government powers, because he's still technically under war, right? And when governments are in war, they have emergency government, so they can do whatever they want.
By the way, that's what dictators did during the Roman Empire.
Exactly.
They would declare war emergencies, and then they would assert power, and then they would become a dictator, and then they would have absolute control.
I love
and,
how you tied it back to
and
history.
And then the aristocrats would
people forget
maintain,
that.
Would keep their societies in perpetual conflict and war, because it allowed the aristocrats and the elites of the Roman Empire to maintain dominion over the Roman Empire. So they always wanted fights and wars. But guess what? It eventually led to their demise, because all it did was create so much international conflict. Then they had massive migration problems, massive conflict with barbarians, massive internal problems politically, culturally. Again, history rhymes.
Yeah. So, and again, I love how you tied it back to that, because it's like every time there's been a big empire, the collapse of it has always been, there's so many similarities. I'm not saying it's the same. It never is.
That's why it's the rhyming.
But it is the rhyming aspect for sure. So again, with and I'll just throw this in there. There's everyone's like wondering, like, why is Russia involved? Why is Ukraine involved? Why is China involved? This all goes back to one thing: natural resources and commodities. Mm-hmm. It always goes back to that. Anybody that tells you otherwise doesn't understand how the world works, unfortunately, right? Russia has the most naturally, it's the richest natural resource country in the world. Right. That's but they're the, and it's ironic because they're like one of the poorest, but that's why they do trade deals with China. China is, quote, wealthy. That's why they do those trade deals. Ukraine is the most richest country when it comes to grains and natural resources as well. That's why there's all these conflicts. But when politicians and NGOs and all these like different special interest groups start getting involved and they start packaging it as like, oh, it's for democracy, it's for the people. I'm always skeptical. I know you are always skeptical. You have to ask questions. Like, wait, what is the ultimate goal here? What are they trying to achieve? And every time Zelensky comes on TV and he's talking, we need another 200 million. I'm like, there you go. More inflation, more taxpayer dollars. Like, enough. What are we doing? No one's winning this war. It doesn't end well. There just needs to be a peace agreement of some sort, but they don't want to do because they keep funneling.
And don't forget, at the beginning of this conflict, the Ukraine and Russia were negotiating on a peace deal, and the West came in and said no. They made him abandon it.
Yeah, you can thank NATO for that.
Clearly, doesn't want any peace, and no matter what landscape you look at it, they want, because then it's how they penetrate a society. More conflict means more regression, more problems. More problems means more external demand, and that external demand comes from the Western forces. They need you to fall apart for them to have control.
NATO.
Yeah, NATO, all of them. The government, the globalist institutions, they all need you to fall apart, for you to be in a state of crisis, for you to then look at them as the parent figure, and then they'll come to your rescue.
By the way, all that stuff that you're talking about, it's not a conspiracy theory. No. There's literally documents that highlight Agenda 2030. We're not going to talk about that now, but I just want you to keep that in the back of your mind. They're literally telling you in these documents what they're doing. This is not a conspiracy. Take them at their word.
Safety. It's correct. All for your protection. It's all for your correct. Well-being. It's all for you to stay happy and have no stress and no sadness. Basically, it's some delusional utopia.
Well, it's a renter's economy. You're just going to rent everything. Yeah. Your house, your lawn.
You own
and then,
nothing.
Yeah, so unfortunately, this is part of that, I think. That's just my opinion, but this is why we keep bringing this up, because every time governments spend more money on a war, the taxpayer is always left footing the bill, and it's a never-ending vicious cycle that doesn't end. And people are just like, well, why don't you care about Ukraine? It's like, it's not that I don't care about Ukraine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, who's paying for this? Are you paying for this? Just got to keep.
You know, I read one that gave a good example of this situation. It's like you live in a neighborhood. Your neighbor is poor and starving. You're kind of relatively okay, but you also have kids and they need to eat. So what you decide to do is, instead of feeding your own children, you take your resources and you give it to your neighbor. Now, is that moral, or are you just abandoning your children to take care of some other stranger?
I'm gonna say something controversial. What you said, that's actually. And it goes against what the masses think. That's actually selfish, because what you've done is you've basically taken, you haven't even taken care of your own self first. and you've already sacrificed that time and that effort that you had to put in to get those resources, and you just gave it to somebody else. That is actually selfish. And people are going to be like, Dan, you're absolutely crazy. I'm like, no. What's not selfish is taking care of your own family.
Yeah, of course.
Top priority. That's not selfish.
That's the point we're getting to.
Exactly.
Here. Let's handle our shit here before we go out there. You know, like, or else we're just going to drown with everybody else. And at that point, nobody wins.
Then they're surprised why so many businesses are leaving the US and Canada. It's like, okay, well,
government. So,
perfect kind of segue into, I guess we'll call it, an interesting character out in South America, but Javier
Milei,
you know, viva la libertad, carajo, you know, like, I'll be honest and hear me out for 2 seconds. We're going to talk about what's going on and just share what our opinion is. But at face value, you look at him and you're like, I fucking love this guy.
He's a character.
Exactly. He's got good energy. He's saying all the right things. He's like a pure libertarian. I'll let you talk about that. You know, and like, he ran his campaign. He did a great job. You know, he did a bunch of interviews and whatnot. He was saying all the right things. And like, you know, I'll be honest. Like, I've been reposting some of his quotes because it's just like, I believe in what that means, you know, but I have questions.
Of course.
I have a lot of questions now.
It's suspicious.
It's very suspicious. And I'll explain to you why. The IMF, International Monetary Fund, or as Robert Kiyosaki says, I'm fucked.
Another globalist.
Another sort of institution that was set up by the central banks or whatever it is. They just hand out, you know, they loan money to countries to help build infrastructure. So like on paper, it makes sense. You're kind of just like, okay, let's get some money, let's build some infrastructure because our civilization needs it and whatnot. But Argentina historically, they were first of all naturally beautifully rich in natural resources, business oriented people, but they've been succumbed to sort of the socialist bug, where, you know, inflation has been rapid. I think it's at around 120%. The peso was devalued. Prior to Milei, the peso was still devalued, or the Argentinian peso was still devalued. But it's like there's these institutions that come in to come save these countries. And there's a quote, I forget where it's from, but I'm just quoting. It's like, when the country needs a hero, we'll give it to them. And
at what cost?
At what cost? Right? So he's done all the right things, or he said all the right things. He gave a really passionate speech. I watched it. He's very firm on his stance with what's going on in the world. But the IMF, by the way, Argentina owes the most money to the IMF. They're the top accounts payable, or like debtor on the IMF's page. I think it's like $194 billion or something like that. I don't know what the number is. Don't quote me on that. But I have questions. Is this a setup? And like, what's ultimately going on right now? Because a true libertarian, I'll let you comment on this. A true libertarian doesn't talk about democracy the way Javier is talking about right
now. Precisely. Those are some of the key little things that we have to pay attention to. Remember, it's not, you can't always focus on what sounds good, or you have this some hope and let the hope kind of blind you from truth. You still have to observe what is being said, what's being done, actions and words. So here's one component is democracy. Now, libertarians believe in a free market voluntary system, which implies no democracy. Democracy is a majority rule. It's primal economics. It's the mob over the minority, the individual. If the majority wants to do something to the minority or to the individual, it can do it, because that's the premise of democracy, is you do what the significant majority wants. That does not abide by voluntary principles. It does not abide by libertarian philosophy. It doesn't abide by classical liberal philosophy. So like in America, when you have politicians talking, we need to save democracy, all they're saying is you need to save the ability for the majority to dictate what it wants over the individual and the minority. That is not a free market philosophy construct. It is not a voluntary construct whatsoever, because you are at the mercy of the majority. Those are games that animals play in nature. You see it all the time with herds and herds of animals battling all kinds of other stuff. So there's something odd there.
You love reposting those line videos.
Because libertarians don't talk about democracy the way he does. So he says he's a libertarian. So that's one thing that's a little odd. You have to keep that into mind, because everybody that talks about democracy like that tends to be bureaucrats, politicians, globalists who don't understand economics, even though he's supposed to be, and he's an economist.
Well, hold on. I think they understand economics
from a different lens, though.
But they're doing it for the benefit of themselves. But I'll let you continue.
Because historically, people perceive that the economy is bestowed by the government and not bestowed by nature or reality. So they assume that governments are at the center of all things. It's just how cultures are formed. It's how societies are formed, which is not the case. But that's just a perceived perception that we've developed over thousands of years of human history, because we've always had that kind of construct. So he talks about democracy in a way that you don't typically or almost never hear a libertarian talk about. So that's a little suspicious. He says it, you need to save democracy. Zelensky says it, Biden says it, Trudeau says it. All these globalist bureaucrats says the exact same thing. So to me, there's something odd there. That to me has to be questioned, because it's not consistent with libertarian philosophy. Now, so this is where you kind of go down this path. It's a hypothetical or this thesis that he could be a wolf in sheep's clothing. So the second thing is, recently there was a video of him accepting Zelensky from Ukraine into the country, and you see them acting like best buds. Now, here's again, as a libertarian,
I think when we saw that video, by the way, I think that to me was just like, wait, what is going on now? Exactly. Like, there's something going on that's just, it's not, it's very fishy in my opinion.
It's weird. It's absolutely weird, because most libertarians you'll ever come across, or any libertarian groups, one, they despise war unnecessarily, like happening in Ukraine and everything. They don't like Zelensky because they think he's a dictator. And for Milei to be talking about dictators and governments as though they're the enemy, and then all of a sudden taking this dictator bureaucrat who loves the Western globalist institutions, be best buds with him, open-handedly welcoming in like his family. There's something fishy there again.
Again, we're not saying what we think it is. It's just like, you just have to ask the question of like, why is this happening? Why is a guy who has been going around the world to Western countries asking people for money, buddy-buddy with a guy who quotes to be a libertarian? I think it's just a question. We're not drawing a theory here. That's not what this is. But you have to just think about that. Like,
don't be led by hope. Again, as a libertarian, this would be the first case where you see a real libertarian to get control of a government and do what he says he wants to do, which reduce government size, reduce spending, and let the market do what it always does. But the thing is, I don't want to be led by hope, because that's how you get disappointed and that's how you make mistakes. You still have to be alert, be attentive to details and what's happening. So these are little variables that I'm noticing, that I've been picking up on, that's telling me something else is happening behind the scenes. Hey, if I'm wrong, that's a good thing. I don't want to be right. I want to be wrong. But being wrong, to be right, it implies that something bad might happen. So let's continue this. I have another little point to this. Klaus Schwab, the head of the WEF, the World Economic Forum, the guy who basically the lead of the Great Reset, who wants you to own nothing and you'll be happy.
These are written documents, exactly. By the way. This is all published. You can go find these books. They're available. Just go read it. It's all there. This is not a theory.
So a premise of libertarian philosophy is a voluntary system where individuals have economic power and there is no centralized system that dictates how you must live your life, because it's based on a voluntary system. If you deviate from that, then you get punished, blah, 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 but that's a whole other thing. So now Klaus Schwab in a recent video came out talking about one of the greatest threats to governments around the world is the libertarian philosophy. People like myself who despise bureaucrats because they don't solve economic problems. They merely play high school games and it just causes chaos. They're savages. They're not conscious people that want to play a voluntary system who respect others. They want to dominate and dictate how things should be. So Klaus Schwab comes out, talks about how libertarians are an enemy. And then you obviously have the IMF, who's one of the biggest creditors to the...
internationally.
Yeah, exactly, Argentina. But not a single globalist Western institution do you see them attacking Milei. Nobody. Nobody
That's
talks
a very
bad.
Valid
Nobody attacks
point,
him.
By the way.
And then you have Klaus Schwab, this head figure of the World Economic Forum, who talks about libertarians as an enemy. But you don't see him attacking Milei.
There has not been, and that's such a valid point, there has not been a single globalist go after Javier right now.
No, none whatsoever.
Zero. So it's like, they've all gone after Trump because, we know Trump doesn't play by their rules, understandably so, and he can't be bought because
and
the
he's
guys,
not a libertarian.
And he's not a libertarian. He's a, you know, he's a patriot. He's a nationalist. And there's nothing wrong with being a nationalist. I think there's a lot of pride. I mean, perfect example is Poland. Poland's had no crime in whatever that they were doing because they have a nationalist policy. But you're seeing all these countries now implement these globalist policies, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
There's been zero criticism about Javier from these people. And that's another question I have. I go, what's going on?
And that philosophy has been labeled as the biggest threat to global governments.
Yeah.
But yet somehow nobody wants to talk about him as some sort of enemy. And this now ties in with Milei's desire to dollarize all of Argentina. Now, the dollarization, what does that do? That further expands the dominion of power of the American dollar, because now an entire economy becomes dependent on a U.S. currency. This would obviously feed into the IMF, more control, feed in more to the World Economic Forum. And then basically what it does is it ties the economy to America again.
So hold on. Before we talk about that, because that's like literally what I wanted to speak about next was, let me just pull this up here so everybody can see that. Having some technical difficulties here. That's okay. There's been a shock in the peso. The Argentinian peso right now has taken a shock. There's two ways. It's very simple. There's two ways that countries can pay off debt. Okay. They can either print more money, hyperinflation. They could pay off that debt with more money, but they're still like carrying interest rates. So it doesn't actually linger. It's literally like putting a massive Band-Aid that doesn't actually solve the problem. Or you have to devalue the currency to pay off that debt, right? And that means that, like, unfortunately for all of Argentina, the next 12 months are going to be brutal. Like, financially just insane. Like, they're going to have, like, it's going to cause, either way, one is hyperinflation, the other one is a form of inflation as well, because that means that every dollarized good that's in the market has to increase in price. So you see grocery stores there, basically all the simple commerce brand or companies and all those produce, they have to raise prices.
Yep.
So the standard of living
state to pay for these things.
Exactly. So it's a very painful process, but it's like, okay, what happens now? Because Argentina, I mentioned this before, Argentina is extremely rich in natural resources. And they have oil and gas assets that they could, that first of all were nationalized at the time by the previous administration. But what is he going to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, this plays in to the globalist hands of if Javier sells those assets to private institutions, who's backing those private institutions? Because now we've entered a world right now, guys, where government and institutions are kind of starting to merge. And I'm not going to name names. You guys can pick out the three biggest ones in the world, but they are the government, right? So you just have to start asking that question. Like, this is a very delicate situation in Argentina right now that could actually backfire long-term.
That's the thing. So part of it is that, for me, is he just there?
But they have to do it because there's like no other
exactly.
option.
So like, yes, obviously you want to fix the economy. That's why he's firing a bunch of bureaucrats, eliminating
departments.
I get it.
The departments.
You reduce your spending. It allows you to take less from the marketplace so you can actually cover your debt. That's one thing. Cool. Perfect. We're on board with that. But the point is, one is, if you're going to be a libertarian and you're going to go cold turkey like this, are you properly educating and guiding your people to understand what's going to happen and how to navigate this environment? Or are you just going cold turkey without have being a good leader and guiding people, and so people are left at their mercy? So my point is with this is Milei there to make libertarians look bad, and in the process kind of reinforcing what Klaus Schwab says and kind of highlighting how we do depend on government, because we've become so centrally dependent on governments from an economic standpoint, that if we take that away and we start falling apart, it just gives them leverage to say, well, you see, you need us. You can't operate without us.
By the way, this also feeds into the narrative that rates are going to come down globally, because Argentina at some point is probably going to have to start issuing bonds. And when you buy bonds, rates go down, right?
You know, so like, and then it goes down to, is all this being done for him to kind of cause chaos, make libertarians look bad, create an economic shock over there, further allow Western forces to globalize and have dominion over Argentina and kind of create a natural resource base for the Western forces. And then Milei gets removed and they put somebody else and they go right back to socialism.
Well, because I think, and this is, okay, this is a theory.
Yeah, exactly.
This part right here is a little bit of theory, but what does the next 5 years look like for this country? Are they going to use this, whatever Javier is doing, whatever policies he started implementing, is this a setup? And it's a question. I'm not saying this is going to happen. Is this a setup for the globalists to come in and say, look, libertarianism doesn't work. We have to go back to socialism. Exactly. Like that's all I'm asking. I'm not saying like that's what's, and again, to your point earlier, I hope we're wrong.
It's because
I literally hope we're wrong.
All it is connecting certain dots together. Klaus Schwab, dollarization, the use of democracy that doesn't align with the typical philosophy of libertarians.
Alliances with dictators. You know?
So these relationships, right? And these dynamics, all it is, we're just trying to portray this macro image. And then it's like, okay, let's watch how this develops. Because don't have too much hope. Don't be blinded by your desire to want a libertarian or a free market system. It makes you neglect all the bad stuff he's doing.
I kind of hope gold and silver just drop more so we can just buy at cheaper prices. Because like this is literally feeding into this like hedge in this market. Exactly.
All we know is we're for sure going to this environment where globalism from a government standpoint is definitely expanding. If it was from a market standpoint where the global economies from individuals to enterprises were globalizing and collaborating on a global level, cool, that's what we want. But now what we have is we have less of it because governments are starting to clash. And it's that division on a global scale, division internally, division domestically, internationally. On every level, you see division. So all it's going to do is just going to fuel more centralization.
Yeah, and you know, going into next year, I mean, wow, we're already December. Wow, we're midway of December. Like 2024 is just around the corner. Next year is going to be crazy, politically, commodities. Yeah. I think crypto too. You've got Bitcoin halving, which we're going to bring on some people to talk about that.
At the same time, we have the crackdown on Bitcoin that's expanding. We had the banks that had the hearing. And you had Jamie Dimon coming out. Talking about how if he was the government, he would crack down and get rid of
Bitcoin. But he's just saying that because he wants a piece of the pie.
Of course. They want control. That's why they want to eliminate all these fluid free market variables that they don't have control over so that they can maintain dominion. Right. Of course. And the same thing with Senator Elizabeth Warren. She's coming down with cracking down on this stuff. They don't want things that take away their ability to have control. They don't like competition. Monopolies don't like competition. Governments don't like competition. So these are things.
There's a lot happening
exactly
next year at a global scale that is going to impact the way the market behaves. I will say one thing: if we have a market, I said this earlier. If we have a market melt up, it just wouldn't surprise me. But that's how they trap people in, right? And the craziest type of melt up that we're probably going to see is the one in Bitcoin, maybe even in gold. We'll see. I mean, it's too early to tell. We just understand. I think we know how manipulated that market is. Mm-hmm. Now it's just a matter of, okay, how are the bigger institutions trying to control Bitcoin now? Well, get other countries involved. How do you do that? Maybe through central banks. I mean, El Salvador is another example. But South America next year, I think, is going to have more attention than it's had in the last 5 years.
And I think, honestly, we could say that for all continents and all countries. Because everybody, think of it from a game.
I don't know. There's just something different about South America. And I'll say this.
They've been a quiet place for a long time.
Exactly. But I will say this. For mining and resources, particularly for mining, there's a massive copper deficit that's coming up in the next, 10 years. What happens to those projects? Do they get nationalized? Do they get private? There's all these things. We saw what happened with Panama too. So again, I feel like next year, for whatever reason, you're not wrong. I think that the rest of the world will be at China, Taiwan. Maybe that, God forbid, that doesn't happen. I hope it doesn't. But South America next year, I think, is going to be on everyone's watch list. Mm-hmm. Brazil, especially, the markets there. I mean, lots of opportunity for growth.
Yeah, think about it, because we've had the Middle East. It kind of erupted, and now you have more chaos there. Looking at Europe, there's more chaos there. Looking at North America, there's more chaos there. One of the only places that really hasn't been touched has been kind of China, because they're kind of secluded out there. And then you have Latin America, which has all these socialist agendas, are tied with all these forces.
You have three countries that are, or Argentina, so them being libertarian. You have Brazil, which is more center right, and then the rest are unfortunately tied to the socialist bug.
Exactly.
So anyway, lots of stuff to pay attention to. Government intervention, in our opinion, is not good. And at this point, at the rate that it's happening, it's like, who's footing the bill at the end of the day? It's always the taxpayers. Exactly. It's always the taxpayers, no matter what anyone tells you. So that's it for today, man. Yep. Lots to digest, especially if you've stayed till the end. We really appreciate it. I want to give a special shout out to everyone who attended our event a few weeks ago in Montreal. Awesome. Great turnout. Lots of positive feedback. It's gotten so much positive feedback that, you know, we're already scheduled the next two. So stay tuned. That's coming. If you're watching right now, end of February in Montreal, we're going to have that event. And then I think end of March as well. But yeah, look, 2023, as it comes to an end, Nick, I don't know. Do you have any like last thoughts about like what the last year has felt like for you personally?
An incredible learning journey. I'm loving this at the same time as I'm hating it.
What do you hate about it?
I just don't like the way the world is shaping. That's what I dislike.
That's the only downside.
But damn, like to learn as much as we've been able to learn in these last couple years, a year, for generations before us would take decades to have access to information.
Very fortunate for that too, because you have access at your fingertips.
Yeah, the amount of information, the amount of things we're able to observe in real time over the last year takes decades to bring together and absorb and then contextualize. We were able to do this so real time in such a short span that, you know, hopefully the rest of our generation kind of absorbs that realization and starts implementing that in their action, because the way the world is shaping, what we're about to inherit as a generation, for me, it's baffling, the thought of the amount of weight that's coming on our shoulders as a generation once the older generation transitions out, that if we don't step up our game, damn, it might be even more chaos.
Yeah, and I think that's why we're doing this, to educate people about what is happening. Are we right or wrong? I never want to say that I'm right, but it's just, these are always questions that you and I have, and we want to bring that to you guys.
It's the scientific method in action when it comes to macroeconomics, because science is basically questioning, developing a thesis, and seeing what actually fits, what doesn't, what works, what doesn't.
Exactly.
All it is, we're applying
very
science.
Simple. It's very simple, right? Like, we have these questions, we ask it, we test it out on the market, exactly. We invest.
And then we observe and we see if the hypothesis works, if it doesn't work. And then from there, we adapt. And then the thing is, by noticing what variables you're looking at, you can shift. If you know you have 10 variables to create this kind of image and one variable is off, okay, you tweak it. Okay, this now makes more sense. So you're just more flexible, more adaptable, and more malleable to the way things are moving. You know, it's like Bruce Lee says, be the water, flow with things.
Flow with it, yeah, exactly. Don't be the rock.
Don't fight what's happening, absorb it, learn it, see what's happening, and then attack once you know it's time to attack.
I can't wait for his next book, because that's going to be exciting. No, I agree with you. Like, I think we've learned a lot. And guys, we're just getting started. I think next year is going to be a big year for us too. And everyone that's listening and watching, you guys are all part of this community. So with that, keep asking questions, keep being curious. Obviously, invest, make money, conserve your wealth. That's also really important. But
as that like to say, feed your curiosity.
Exactly. Like, feed your curiosity, guys. We'll leave it at that. And we'll see you next time on the New Gen Mindset Podcast.
Ciao, guys. Take care.